1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're all very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannon sitting in for Joe. 51551 is our text number. Now, earlier this week, we spoke to Jasmine, and Jasmine described how isolated and lonely she felt after 20 years caring for her mother, who is now 100. And good afternoon to you. What age is your mother? Have I got Anne there on the line?
Oh, hi, hello.
Hi, Anne. How are you?
I'm grand, thank you.
Yeah, we were talking, you called in after Jasmine's call in relation to the role of carers and the people who are being cared for.
Yeah, well, I called in there a while ago, just actually quite shocked with the whole system of home care. My mother's just coming on 92. She's a lot of underlying conditions, diabetes and heart condition, and she's suffered a couple of little mini strokes, and, you know, she's pneumonia before Christmas, and, like, she's very vulnerable, but a home care package was put in place to get her home before Christmas. And, you know, we were quite happy with the package we were given, taking her home. But since she's come home, the package is crumbling from under us.
Tell me about that package, Anne. Like, how many hours was she being offered?
She was supposed to get an hour in the morning because she's now not very mobile. She can walk on a walking frame assisted. Like, she's not to walk on her own because she's at risk of falling. And then that's the morning time to lift and dress and wash and help with breakfast and that, and then she has a half an hour in the evening that's to get her ready for bed and put her to bed, which we were informed was going to be from 7 to 7:30 in the evening. That was the time she would be put to bed. So that, like, wasn't the best, but it was the best we could get. So we accepted it to get her home because, you know, she's had a lot of loss in her life, and the only security she has in her own life at the minute is her home and her familiar surroundings. So,
and she wanted to get home, yeah. And you, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, they did speak, and they did, you know, inform her of all the care she would have in a nursing home, and the head went down, and she just put her head down, and all she wanted was to get home, and the fight would be for the fight to get home, and the fear in myself would be would the head would go down and there'd be no fight left in her if she didn't get home. So we proceeded and got home and took the assistance that we were told was going to be there, and we've tried to soldier on the best we can. But then I'm not really informed appropriately, as well. I was upset and frustrated. It's just the home care who looked after her is one person, and she's going to be taking 4 weeks holidays in the year, and there'll be no cover for my mother over those 4 weeks. And it's up to ourselves, whatever way or shape or form that we want, that's to us to look after those 4 weeks.
And tell me, you don't live at home with your mother, Anne?
No. She's an elderly lady who lives on her own, and I don't even live in the same town as her. So, like, I'm trying to work as well.
And is there any family available to step in to fill these gaps?
There's family. I have two sisters who have died or passed away, like, quite a while ago, like 30 years ago, and 25. So, like, there's no, like, a brother in England. There's very little family on the ground, and anything that's left are working and rearing families. So.
And your mother's a widow, is she?
She's a widow woman, widowed very young, and raising small children, and had to work and provide for herself, and never sat and took a penny from anybody. Like, anything we ever got, she saved and bought it, and her own home, she bought it, and that's all. The pride and joy of her life was her little car and her house, and she had to give up the driving, so that was gone. And now her home is what she feels her accomplishment of her life, and she clings on to it because of losses in her life, that familiarity of her own house and her belongings. You know, like a child, it's, you know, a routine and your own little bits around you that keeps her happy. And, like, that's what we're trying to do. My wish is her wish, you know. And to be in her own home is that all she asks for. And, like, it's been pulled bit by bit by bit. It's crumbling from under her. And at the minute now, the care, she doesn't know who's opening the door in the morning, and she has to be bed washed because she's padded and can't walk on her own. So she's put to bed from between 7 and 7:30 and is not lifted. Then it could be 11:30 some days before somebody turns up. She's lying in the bed awake from probably 7 or 8 o'clock, just lying there wondering, is there somebody coming? Who's going to come? A stranger could walk in the door and wash her. And I think that's just unreal for woman of 92.
I can't imagine that. Yeah. What is it? There is no regular, like, the carer can change. Is that the issue?
Well, she's supposed to have one, but this, I don't know if this is exceptional, but the lady has then they have training days, they have different agencies. Then if the lady's sick, then she's different agencies. And then if the agencies can't get round, maybe she gets nobody. And there's no communication between the home care people. I only find out through the grapevine. Maybe someone passed my mother's and her blinds are not open at 11:30. And I'm getting a phone call to say, your mother's blinds are closed at 11:30 in the day. And I'm in a job trying to work. So I'm having to ring a neighbour, and they find her like left in a bed. And if I try and ring to get information, I just need to know, is there someone turning up or not? Because I've tried to get my GP to write letters, and they got letters back. And I've tried ringing, and I've been told that get the person that's dealing with it to bring me back. There's no phone calls back. There's no communication. They'll don't ring me back. It's very frustrating, very upsetting.
It must be unbelievably stressful to get a call from a neighbour and wonder, is there something after happening or what's going on?
I know, and I don't know in the morning when I'm going to work, is there anyone coming? And she rings me, are you coming if I need to go to the bathroom? Is there someone coming? I can't tell her that such a lady's coming or they're not, because I don't know who's attending her. Like, if there's anything different that she needs a care, I can't ring the person and say, look, my mother has to have this, or just check. I don't know who to ring, because I have no information as to who's turning up or how long they're spending. I can't speak to the people that are over the home care. They're lovely girls. When they do come, they're the best of girls. They're more than generous to her. She gets on so well with them all. They're very obliging, but it's not their fault.
And how is she about the idea of, I think any of us, at whatever age in life we are, the idea of a stranger coming into our bedroom and having to, you know, to be, as you say, dressed and toileted and all of that. How is she with that?
Very upsetting. Very upsetting for her. You know, she's been in hospital a few times now, and she's understood she's had to be washed as well. And, you know, she's got a little bit better. But the fact that the door opened, you know, she could be asleep. Like, the door opens and a stranger walks in and you're in your bed. You know, and she's been robbed a couple of years ago when she was a little bit mobile. She fell at 80 and broke her hip, and she'd been robbed a few times, and that left her, you know,
very vulnerable. Yeah.
So now she kind of, I don't know how she accepts that the door opens and she doesn't know who's coming in to lift her and wash her. Like, that to me, I just think the elderly accept an awful lot and say nothing, because they don't have a voice, and there's nothing that they're acting into a corner, and what can she do about it? Like, if she kicks up a fuss, all anyone's going to throw on her face is a nursing home, and she's terrified of that. That's her biggest fear, so she'll say nothing. She'll accept anything just to be in her own house, and I find that it's sad to look at her accepting low standard care, which and it's the elderly that's getting it, because they've no voice. Like, nobody else would accept this sort of treatment.
And even that, the what you said there about being put to bed at 7:30, like of a summer's evening.
I know.
And maybe not being able to get out of that bed again until mid-morning the next day.
No.
I mean,
no.
You wouldn't put a child to bed at 7:30 on a summer's evening.
No.
And this, of course, is because the carers are on their shift and they're not going to be in it at 10 or 11 at night.
Down to yourself, down to your family, down to do what you like. Like, good luck. That's the answer you get. And the same repeated to me. I've explained the vulnerability, and like, everyone has a mother. Do you have a mother? You know, I try to be on the human. I thank them. I say, look, I just need cooperation. Could you inform me if there's nobody going to be there? You know, I'm at work. I'm very thankfully understanding, because like, I've been emotionally upset in work over the last while. And, you know, it's just so sad to see a person who's worked hard and cared for you and cared for a lot of other people, a very good person, just to be treated like that in the last, you know, their most vulnerable years of their life in this country. You know, I just got to the stage where I've given up. You know, I didn't even want to speak, really, because I just think we're all in the same boat here. Like, there's not just me. There's more and more people with trying to look after their elderly parents and having to work, because everyone has to work now. You know, so how do you do it?
Oh, indeed. Yeah, stay with us there, Anne. Edward O'Reilly.
Yes, hi, good afternoon.
Hi, Edward.
I'm just coming on the line because I had a brother who did this, and this is really for him because, you know, we need to start supporting the carers more, because they are isolated, and we could potentially run out of carers, and the way the healthcare is going, we're going to need loads of them.
Tell me about your brother, Edward.
Sean looked after my mum for years, and he was incredibly good to her. And there was one situation that I sent the email, and it's quite an emotional time as well, because he was a great lad. But one time my mother wanted to go to the toilet, and she was still using the walking frame, and it took about 8 or 10 minutes to get her to the toilet and bring her back. And she asked Sean, could you go? And he jumped up and he got her up on, started walking, brought her out down the tiled wee places, we would call like a little corridor, which was about 10 or 12 metres away. And halfway down the corridor, my mum, in the state of mind that she was in, she was suffering from Alzheimer's, she had started to urinate. And I was walking behind my brother, and I saw that my brother quickly took a towel off the radiator, and he dragged it along with his feet. He got my brother my mother to the toilet, sat her down. He turned on the taps. He left them on for about 10 seconds. Then he turned them off, and he asked my mother a question. He said, "Mum, are you finished?"
So he did all of that just to preserve her dignity.
And I tell you, it's actually tough talking to you about it, but he did that, and then he cleaned her, he sorted out her clothes, and he brought her back. Now, if we don't support the people who do this, where are we going? He gave that woman more. Now, obviously, I get it. He loved her and all this, but we as a society need to be aware
of what we're asking.
That carers are struggling badly. They become depressed and down. They become isolated because of nowhere to either run to or talk with. And yet, all we as a society seem to run after is not supporting them. And it does concern me, because I come across this all the time. And my mum was lucky, she stayed at home. And my God, while he struggled and he found it difficult, when he was there, he gave 179%, or as he would have always said, 100%. And the ladies that went in to help him were just unbelievable as well. The service that they had in the north of Ireland was unbelievable. And I'm singing this song today for those people who are what I call are the unsung heroes, and Sean was just one of them. And I think it's about time society realised that they need help.
Oh, I'm sure, Edward, anybody who has found themselves in this situation will know there's some amazing carers out there, the professional carers who are brought into people's homes, and indeed people like your brother Sean, who are taking on that role in their families, and it is not an easy role by any measure or means. Vanessa O'Sullivan, you're a carer, but not in a family situation.
No, not in a traditional sense anyway. So about 6 years ago, I came to West Cork to help out a friend. He is registered blind. He's been blind most of his life. And I came down to help him on his farm. He was finding it tough. He takes on volunteers, but they don't always arrive. So I came down just before college started to help him out. And I came down then during the winters, during the summers. And I just loved it here. And I loved being around him and what he could teach me and what I could learn here. And so when college was out, I realized very, very quickly that he needed someone here full time, and he deserved someone here full time. So I came down and became his carer.
So what age are you yourself now, Vanessa?
I'm 31 now.
And what age is Ed, who you're caring for?
He's 70.
Okay. And you've been there now, how long did you say?
As a carer, I've been here full time now 3 years, and it took them just over 2 years to actually register me as a carer, to recognise the work that I was doing.
So you're getting the carer's allowance for your work there now.
I am.
And you said it's a farm. What kind of a farm is it?
It's a goat farm. We're actually celebrating 40 years. He's celebrating 40 years next week, actually.
Wow.
Which is great.
And do you milk the goats yourself?
I do, and I help him bring them up. I help him bring them to bed and anything else that he needs.
And in terms of what you have to do for Ed, or what level of care does Ed need at this stage?
Well, he's very, very independent, and up till recently he had a guide dog. Because he's blind, he had a guide dog. And because of his balance now, he has arthritis in the spine and he has balance issues. They won't give him another dog. So this all came within a year of me becoming recognised as a carer, that they actually decided he wasn't getting another dog, which meant he's not able to leave the house unless he has someone with him.
Yeah, that's a big change in somebody's life, isn't it, if your independence goes suddenly like that?
Yes, that's literally his life. He actually said to me at one stage, the man is 70 years old, and he broke my heart when he said, my life is over. But thankfully, because I'm here, he realises it's not.
And he's obviously you're there, you've given him back some independence. Is there other roles you have to do? What else do you have to do? I'm just trying to think about your day down there on Cape Clear on this goat farm.
Yeah, so it's kind of breakfast, lunch, dinner, the main meals. It's cleaning the house. It's making sure that it's security and it's someone to talk to. And it's like, for instance, there was the other day, he was milking away. I was in the house and he gave me a call, said he fell off his stool and he couldn't get back up. You know, so simple things like that. To have someone there, or if he drops a pen, whereas before he would have been able to get down, root around the floor for the pen, pick it back up and off you go. Now, because of the arthritis, getting down is very hard, roaming around the floor looking for stuff is hard. So, I mean, I think the social aspect is really, really important for people to have a carer, especially when they're elderly and they're isolated, as well as the physical needs of the person. But you have to want to do it. I get a lot of people asking, why did I have to come down? Why doesn't his son do it? Why doesn't his other son do it? But the way I look at it, like what your last caller said, you know, you have to give 120% and you have to want to be able to give 120%. It's not always possible, but you have to want to do it. And you have to want to do it for that individual person. It's important.
And, you know, I hear what you're saying, Vanessa, but, you know, you have volunteered for this. You put your hand up for this job. And you obviously, I can hear you have a lot of care there for Ed. And you have a very good relationship. Is it tough, though?
Very. It can be. There are times where, like, he'll get up for the toilet during the night and I'm awake. Instantly I'm awake. Until he goes back to bed, all I can think of, is he going to slip? Is he going to need help? Is he going to fall? Is he going to need this? Is he going to need that? And like what the last caller, but it's second nature. You don't even think about it until, like the other day, you had the caller on who raised this issue. There was also another instance where I had been working all day and in the house and with people just generally on the farm, and I was absolutely exhausted, and I brought him down to a music session, and someone actually came over to me and said to me, do you want me to tell him how tired you are? And I just said, like, you know, it's my job to be looking after him, not the other way around. Why would you ever say that to him? But they could see it. And it does get tough. It gets tough because, as the last caller said, there is no help. There's no emotional support, or there's very, very little. And when you do get it, it's on this basis of, for me, as you just said, but you volunteered for it. You decided to do it. You know, but you're doing literally a 24-hour job. You're on 24-hour call for €230. Which is about €30 more than what I would get if I was sitting at home doing nothing on a dole. So yeah. The financial pressures also come in. I mean, my mother was a carer. She had two households to support, hers and her parents. And the financial burden alone is just incredible. We live in an area, I live on Cape Clear, we live in an area where there's very, very little public transport. If I need to get the nearest hospital to me is Bantry. And it is about 40 minutes from when we get to the mainland, about 40 minutes away. And without public transport, I can't get there. And there is no public transport. So to get to Bantry, if we're early enough, we have to do an hour and a half to Bandon, get another bus from Bandon out to Bantry, or we take the two and a half hour journey to Cork City and sit there for hours and hours and hours. You know, and that's the choice we make.
Well, let me talk to Ed. Ed?
Hiya.
How are you?
Very good.
This must have been a life-changing moment for you when Vanessa put her hand up and said that she would agree to be your carer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, I've been farming for, 30-something years at the point it happened, and I could see what was happening. I was gradually getting less and less able. And I also had the worry about, you know, what's going to happen when this dog that I have retires. And I could, you know, I'm not stupid. I could see that my days were numbered, really, in terms of actual, you know, being able to farm. It's made a massive difference to me because, as you probably appreciate, that from a point of view of a small farmer, it's not just a living. It's a way of life. And you're part of a community, and I also happen to be a member of People Before Profit, and I'm actually the convener in West Cork for People Before Profit, and therefore I'm involved politically, and I'm involved in running Facebook pages and so on. And all these things, you know, I've done them for years, and that they're my life, you know, and I sing, and Vanessa mentioned the music session there. If I didn't have somebody like Vanessa, and in fact, it's not even like Vanessa, if I didn't have Vanessa, actually, because Vanessa shares the interest. And, you know, we were friends before she was my carer, so it's a kind of a transition. It's a natural transition. And at the moment, fortunately, most of the time, I'm okay. I'm still continent. I'm still mentally, you know, in good condition. I can do all those things. It's just, you know, my balance is getting bad. I've got an ankle that turns over very easily. It's security. And like, for instance, I used to love cooking. But nowadays, you know, if we want to cook something, I can sit at the table and chop stuff. But I would be risking severe burns if I stood at the stove and stirred a pan because my balance is shaky. You know, it's things like that. And when you think about it, what I'm getting is I'm lucky because my carer is a friend. And that changing status is, I mean, it took us quite a while to be able to get it over to the carers assessment people, because in fact it took us all the way to an oral appeal. And when we got to the oral appeal, it was very obvious to the person. We were lucky because the person was from a farming background, and she immediately knew what I was talking about, because she had relatives who were in the same position.
And tell me, can I ask you, Ed, because it strikes me like you obviously, you know, despite having this disability, being blind from birth, I think, was it? You've always
well,
had...
Well, no, from being... I lost one eye when I was 11 months old with measles, and the other eye with a pair of scissors when I was 3 and a half.
Oh.
So most of my life, yeah.
Most of your life, yeah. But you had managed to independently run a farm, as you say, get politically involved and all of that.
Yeah, I used to teach before I was a farmer too.
But do you find it now difficult to have to cede your independence to Vanessa, to a carer? Is that very frustrating, and can that be part of a difficulty in the relationship between a carer and the person they're caring for?
Potentially it could. I mean, as it stands at the minute, fortunately, it isn't, because... But it's a dangerous situation, you know what I mean? If you're depending for your, if you like, for your life, literally, on somebody, I mean, if whether, you know, whatever the situation is, that obviously you are very dependent on them. And it's difficult not to put too much weight on that person. Do you know what I mean? I mean, what Vanessa was saying there about somebody saying she looked very tired, should they tell me? I mean, I can't see that she's looking very tired. But, for instance, if I know we've, you know, I'm really into the singing. I've been a singer for, well, I don't know, probably nearer 50 years. And, the situation is that you know, I wouldn't pick that up. I might have done the next day when she was shattered. But if you know, if another session came up, and you know, I wouldn't go if I knew she was too tired. I wouldn't go if I was too tired, whatever else. But the truth of the matter is that the whole thing is, yes, you are very dependent ultimately, and I can see I'm going to become more dependent as time goes on. And I mean, I have a son who's still around on Cape Clear, but he works mostly at sea. Mm. And at this time of the summer, because he works on the ferry, and he works on, and in fact, he works on a couple of ferries. And in the winter, he goes away on contracts working elsewhere when there's less work on the ferry. I mean, I'm not joking. I saw him just this afternoon, and that was the first time I'd seen him to talk to for about 3 days. So, you know, it's not a question of the family refusing to do it or not wanting to do it. It is a question of the fact that, practically speaking, if he's going to have a career and he's a little bit older than Vanessa, and if there's, you know, he's going to have an income of his own and he's going to be able to do things himself, he's going to have to work. If he was, and a lot of carers, I know a lot of sons and daughters do give up their lives effectively.
And you didn't want to ask him to do that?
No, I really didn't.
Can I ask you?
I was lucky because I had somebody else.
Can I ask you, because you're clearly such an independent person, you clearly have a very optimistic outlook on life. Take me back. That's an extraordinary piece of bad luck that, as a child who had, you know, lost one eye through illness, then had some terrible accident and ended up losing his second eye. Do you have any memory of that?
Oh, yeah. The funny thing is, what I remember about that is being really worried because I knew my mother would be furious. She wasn't, actually. She was very upset, but I was terrified my mother would be furious. You know, that's what I remember. I don't remember the pain. I think we fortunately, as creatures, we're very good at forgetting pain. If we weren't, we would probably die at an early age.
But what did you do? Did you were just playing with the scissors as a child?
No, what happened, actually, was I was mad. It's ironic. I was mad keen on comics, and we'd been shopping, and in my mother's shopping bag, she had the latest whatever the comic was, and she said, go and get the comic out of the bag. And she was having a cup of tea, and what she used to do is show me the pictures, and she'd read me the captions, you see. Mm-hmm. And I went to get the comic out of the bag, and her purse was in the bag, and there was a bit of leather, you know, where it had worn, was hanging off it, and there's a pair of nail scissors next to it in the bottom of the bag. And I obviously thought, I'm going to cut this bit of leather off, tidy it up. But of course, at the age of 3 and a half, I didn't know how to use scissors. And that's been a big lesson to me, because with my children, I always took the attitude, don't leave any tool around you haven't taught them to use, basically.
Indeed. Absolutely, indeed. Ed, stay with us. Susan Shannon, I'm just 1850-715-815-51551 is our text line. Susan, you called in response to Anne's story there about her mother and the situation she finds her mother left in, depending on carers that may or may not, that she may or may not know even.
Yeah, hi Anne, how are you? So I think we were in some similar situation with my mum. She was had a stroke about 4 or 5 years ago now at this stage, and she lost her in basically overnight, you know, lost an ability down her right side, so she couldn't move around, and also lost her speech. But we kind of rallied and we tried to get her home. We were told by the hospital at the time that, you know, we should probably look at the nursing home option, but we were very keen to just see could we make it work. So we brought her home, and I suppose from then we just try and put in a place between the healthcare package that the HSE provided, and with families and rotas and stuff like that, we just tried to make it work. But I think what we only found out over time was really that the HSE is outsourcing these help hours of help to private companies, you know, so they're the big home care companies that you hear, you know, being advertised, and smaller ones as well. And really, from their perspective, you're the customer. So you can actually go in and talk. Now, we didn't realise this initially, you know, because we were new to the whole thing, but you can actually go in, talk to those, you know, the managers in those companies and just say, you know, look, this isn't working for me. We need, you know, we need to break out the hours differently. We need someone who can come in at 9 o'clock at night, or we need, you know, and they also have systems. So they have systems in there that basically if somebody doesn't log in on a home phone or whatever by a certain time, the system will automatically call a next of kin and tell them so that the person is never left. You know what I mean? There's a lot of systems and processes in place in these bigger companies that actually solve for some of this. I can hear that lady was really stressed, and I remember what it was like, not knowing if somebody was showing up or not. And we ended up changing care company for my mother because we were really unhappy with one of the companies we were working with. You know, we
but
had the
issue. Can I ask you, Susan, is this usual? I'm just wondering how many of the carers that are coming into people's homes now are directly employed by the HSC or on contract with the HSC, and how many of them are, as you say, outsourced to these private care companies? And I wonder, is that a Dublin phenomenon, or is it? Have you any idea of how usual that arrangement would be?
I don't know how you. It seems to be quite common. Now, I don't know if it's predominantly Dublin. Obviously, the population would be bigger here. They may have to, you know, but I do know that there's a limit of hours that the HSE can actually cover themselves, and anything over that quota, I think, is handed out to private companies. You know what I mean?
So you found that quite good then, as in you could actually go in and haggle and negotiate different terms?
Yeah, well, basically, they're getting paid, these companies, by the HSE, you know, so they effectively, in that position, you're going in and saying, well, you know, this is my, you're providing a service to my relative, and I'm not happy with this, you know. And now, you know, I did, you know, we had a good few issues before I raised it, but I actually did ring and discussed it, and I was told if we were unhappy, we could go in and we could say the reasons why, put it in writing, and then change to a different company, pick a company, and go in and talk to a few companies first.
Well, you certainly feel like, it sounds like you felt in a lot more control of the situation then. Anne, if you're still with us.
I am, yeah, I'm
here. Have you any idea of what the arrangement was with, or what is the arrangement with your mother's care?
I know some people coming home, maybe it is Dublin. They get agency. But we didn't. We got home care, like the area home care people. Mm. And they were, my mother had had it since, you know, a while, because she fell and broke her hip and lived alone. And it was a regular lady that she knew, and I nearly became a family friend.
Yeah.
And she was a tender, and it was half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the evening, and they were managing grand. She had a better mobility at the time. She was on a stick and could actually go out of the house, but now she cannot really go out at all without very much pain and a wheelchair, but and doesn't go out very often. But before Christmas, she had a mini stroke, and became a lot more vulnerable in herself, more childlike, and saw this situation was changed. Mm. He was given a different care for an hour, but it was supposedly home care, is the same as before. She's one lady who's supposed to be her regular lady, and then when she's gone or sick or training, the HSC, they bring in agency, and we've no control of the agency they bring in. So I have no number to ring any agency to find out anything. And the home care people don't inform me of anything. They do all the arranging, and I know I'm not informed of what's happening.
Okay. Geraldine Foy, you've been caring for, or you did care for,
yeah,
your father-in-law. Yeah.
In 2004, he started to do weird stuff, like put the dirty dishes in the fridge and the cook, or not the dishwasher, you know, this kind of stuff. And he got a little bit aggressive, so we got concerned, brought him to the GP. We were told that he had onset dementia, right? So I looked after that man until 2011, when I realised him getting up at 4 in the morning with the birds looking for cups of tea was actually affecting my health with chronic headache. And I ended up in an MRI machine with the cage over my head. I didn't like the experience, as the GP thought there may be a tumour or something there. But as it worked out, it was caring for him and the lack of sleep, the exhaustion, right?
Right.
So We decided that we would talk to his doctor up in Beaumont Hospital, the geriatric doctor, and I rang him. I remember making this call because at this stage I had had enough. I rang him and I said, look, I'm caring for my father-in-law. His family are helping. There's a woman calls 1 hour a week to wash him. You know, we did wash him as well. But I said, I think the man hasn't slept in 6 weeks. And I think the care we're giving him is probably affecting him. And we're not, you know, it's maybe what we're offering now is no longer
isn't good enough,
him,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the doctor in Beaumont told me to bring him up through casualty in A&E and they did admit him within an hour. Now, fair play to them, he was admitted within an hour on a hospital ward. It took them 2 tranquilizers that would knock out an elephant to get him to go asleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a meeting with the social worker, and the social worker decided that, you know, the type of care we were giving now wouldn't be enough for the stage he's at, and that it was time to consider the whole. And there was tears, and there was sadness, and there was, you know, guilt,
mm-hmm.
because he didn't want to go into the home. But the GP had said to myself, because he used to live with us, and I used to feel awful, and his sister and all rang me, she predeceased him, because he died 3 years ago. But the GP rang and she said, look, don't feel bad, she said, because if he had cancer and he needed chemotherapy, and you know, a chemo and leukemia, she said, it's going to make him, it would make him sick and he might lose his hair. She said, you'd want him to have it, right?
Mm-hmm.
To improve his life quality and everything else. She said, the home system is not all as bad as it's made up to be, because he needs 24-hour care. And she says, at some stage, he's going to end up in there. So she said, it's now that he needs it. So what I wanted to say to the lady that was talking to you during the week was, if this is the stage you're at, you have to do what's right for the person you're caring for.
This is Jasmine, who was talking about 20 years caring for her 100-year-old mother.
Yeah, you have to do what's right for the person.
Yeah, I think a lot of this, there's an awful lot of guilt wrapped up in the decision-making around us, isn't there?
I felt awful until the GP had that chat with me. And then it suddenly dawned on me, this makes sense. You know, but you have to say to yourself, the care I'm given, if I find it so overwhelming and exhausting, is there a better way?
But then Geraldine, you hear Anne there, and I don't know if Anne is still with us. She was so worried that, and you're there, that your mother's head would go down and it wouldn't come up again, as you put it.
No, because sometimes, unless, in case of my father-in-law, he wouldn't even know where he was half the time, right? Our little white dog died, and he used to say, where's the dog? And I'd say, the dog is dead. I just went down one day for about 3 hours, and I just gave in. I said, oh, he's out the back chewing a bone. And the dog was forgotten about. It's sometimes, in this new surrounding, they mightn't even recognise it.
Mm.
You know? I mean, we were asked, he'd asked me, did you bring the car with you? I want to go home. And I'd say, no, I had to get the bus down. And there was every excuse given, but he was getting the care of that he needed.
And you were totally at peace with that decision once you made it.
It took me at least 12 weeks because I had my own family saying to me, you're not a person for putting blah blah into the home. And I'm saying to them, it's not you saying this to me, because the care I was given, blah blah, wasn't what the person needed now. He needed extra help.
Yes, you, not just guilt, but a bit of judgment around this issue as well, I suppose.
Yeah, but eventually the judgmental people realised that this is what was required at this stage of his life. Okay. Because don't forget, you have to make sure they have a drink every half hour. You have to make sure if you're running off to the school to pick up the kids or running out to the shop, that the kitchen door is locked, the kettle's out of sink, all the blades are away. We had to get his bedroom. We had the nurse up and she told us the stand that his telly was on, get the wheels off it, nail it down, right, because he might grab that and fall and hurt his head. We had to convert his bedroom into a safe place for him, and the whole house had to be changed because ultimately he had to be kept safe. But ultimately the decision is going to have to be made, and sometimes it takes a while to accept it, but eventually you will see that it is the right decision.
Okay, I'm sure that will make a lot of people think today. Geraldine, thank you for that. 1850 715 815, our text line is 51551, or you can email us at joe@rte.ie.